Good morning. What I'd like to talk to you about is kind of some of the findings from this study that we're doing on looking at prisoner reentry, what happens to those that return from prison in California, but from a public health perspective. So this is going to kind of walk you through some of the key findings, but also kind of where we're going next, because California, like many states, is currently cutting back, trying to cut corrections costs, but in doing so is also cutting back the services that it's providing this population, both in prison as well as out in the community. I also have no financial relationships to disclose. This is not surprising to you that California is one of the states that leads kind of in terms of our incarceration rates, the fact that in the past 20 years, our population has grown threefold. And as we all know from a number of studies, that those that are returning to communities bring with them a whole host of healthcare needs. But also what's happening in California, as in many states, is that we're seeing severely reduced funding for rehabilitative services in prison. We also are seeing that the safety nets out in the community have had their base funding substantially cut. And California, like other states, is also implementing some new policies that have implications in terms of the treatment and how we're going to go about meeting the needs of this population. So what I'm going to talk about today is briefly about kind of what we know about the healthcare needs of this population, kind of an approach that we developed to look at measures of in terms of gaps and potential access to services, that is the capacity of the safety net in different counties to meet the needs of this population. Talk a little bit about what are the challenges that these individuals face in trying to meet their healthcare needs, how health affects the reentry process. And then also I'm going to talk about some of the changes in California that are going to also ultimately impact what's going on in terms of treatment. I'm showing here results from an analysis of the Bureau of Justice Statistics Survey. They did a national survey. We're fortunate in California that we can subset to the sample that's specific to California. And this gives you a sense of how many are self-reporting both physical, acute, and chronic health conditions. Chronic health conditions are of interest, particularly because that means conditions that require ongoing management and treatment, not only while in prison, but when they leave. Not surprisingly to most of you is the fact that mental health substance abuse treatment needs are especially high in this population. The survey asked them, while you were in prison, did you receive treatment? Most reported that they received some treatment for medical problems while incarcerated. But interestingly, those that met the criteria for drug abuse or dependence problems, only about half of them reported that they received treatment while incarcerated. This is substantially lower than if we look at the national results. Those that identified themselves as having recent mental health problems, they were similar to the national average in the sense of about half reporting that they had received those results. Now, that survey was conducted in 2004. We know that much has changed in many states, including California, in terms of the landscape. One of the things we did was we were interested in not only taking data on parole data from the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation and mapping kind of where are their concentration of parolees to understand which counties as well as within counties, which neighborhoods and communities are really impacted by reentry, which is the ones that most need to be most concerned about thinking about how to meet the needs of this population. But we also went through this laborious process to try to define for ourselves what do we mean by the safety net for these individuals, and basically whether in terms of physical health, mental health, or alcohol and drug treatment needs, we defined it as basically that safety net in each of these counties, and the safety net varies by counties, that was designed to try to address the needs of the medically indigent. Now, a simple way of looking at kind of the relationship of concentration of parolees and the distribution of safety net facilities is simply to do a mapping of the location of these facilities vis-a-vis parolee concentrations. But that's a very naive way of looking and thinking about the potential access that this population has to these services. So it doesn't take into account, for example, the capacity of a facility. You can have a clinic that may have two physicians. You may have another clinic that has 10 physicians and in turn 10 nurse practitioners, for example. So a single clinic alone doesn't give you much sense about capacity. It also doesn't give you sense about the underlying demand for services. In this sense, we were interested in taking into account demand for services as measuring it by the percent of the households in those locations that were below the federal poverty level. And then we also took into account travel distance. What I'm showing here is some of the results. It's a brief summary of what we looked at in terms of some of our accessibility findings. The bars show you, what we did is you have a distribution in terms of accessibility results, and we broke them out into quartiles. So the red bars indicate areas that say what percent of parolees in those counties reside in areas that have relatively low access, in this case, to general acute care hospitals. The green bars indicate those that live in areas that tend to have relatively higher levels of access. And what we see is in the four counties that we did the in-depth studies, that it actually varies considerably. Parolees in Alameda County, for example, a greater percentage of them tend to reside in areas with lower levels of access, potential access to general acute care hospitals. Kern County in California is a rural county. In that county, the major city is Bakersfield, and that is where the highest concentration of parolees are. So that's why you see in Kern that because of the fact that they're just congregating in the one city that's in that county, that they tend to have better access. You also can look at it by race ethnicity of the parolees. In this case, I'm showing you the results for Los Angeles County. So, for example, the top bar shows you for all parolees in LA County, what percent reside in areas with relatively lower high access to general acute care hospitals. If you look at it for Los Angeles County by race ethnicity, we see that particularly African Americans tend to reside in areas that have some of the lowest levels of access. That's where the Martin Luther King Hospital, which closed and then is reopening, is located. But it's an area there you have a very high concentration of parolees, but very few resources. Just to summarize for you briefly what we found, and the results are in a report that we did that I'll show you the information about at the end. It gives you a sense that across counties there's variation in terms of the capacity to meet the needs of this population. In all counties, I didn't show you the maps, but we did a lot of GIS mapping. What we found is importantly, community clinics tend to fill a very important role in filling in basic geographic gaps in the safety net. As I mentioned, accessibility varies by not only geographic area, but base race ethnicity. So it suggests even when we begin thinking about in a state like California, how do you implement policies to try to meet the needs of this population? You have to take into account the wide variation across counties, both in how the safety net is set up, as well as their capacity. So I'd like to talk briefly about what are some of the challenges that these individuals face when they return home. Our initial goal was to present some findings from a series of focus groups that we're doing in three of the counties, Alameda, San Diego, and Los Angeles, because some of the policy changes are happening that we had to take into account that delayed somewhat our finishing up. So we're still in the process of collecting that data. But I want to summarize for you briefly kind of what we know from some other major studies as well as some interviews that we've done. This is showing you some results from the Urban Institute study. They had interviewed about 1,100 individuals. And similar to what we saw with the survey for California, you have a high percentage of individuals reporting chronic health problems such as hypertension, asthma, diabetes, HIV/AIDS. Most do not have health insurance. Upon release, the reentry outcomes tend to vary by health status. Importantly, you get a sense of how those that have physical health, mental health, substance abuse problems, that they're the ones that are going to have the most trouble in terms of housing assistance. It's not surprising for those that are mentally ill or for those that are duly diagnosed that they in particular are at risk for homelessness. It's very difficult to place these individuals. Poor employment outcomes was, you know, associated both with physical health problems as well as mental health substance abuse problems. And it was interesting that in terms of depending on families for assistance, they found that particularly men who had substance abuse problems were more likely to be receiving help from their families when they got out, whereas both men and women who were mentally ill were among the least likely to be receiving help from their families. These are some interviews that we had done with mental health providers in these different counties. Not surprising, again, the fact that lack of health insurance and finances and important limitations of treatment options. It was interesting that some of the counselors are talking about how HIPAA precludes them from getting information on a client. So, for example, one individual was saying how she would work with an individual just returned from prison, try to place them in a crisis home, and again to manage the care as they were in the crisis home, and then as they left, but that she had trouble getting information from the crisis home, who felt that they cannot disclose that information as to when that individual would be leaving. Stigma, of course, is a very important issue for a number of these individuals, and in California, and I'll talk a little bit more about, we don't typically think about parole being a way to link them to services, but in fact, it is one of the ways that they have been linked to services, whether you go attend PAC meetings where different service providers participate in them so that they can start getting access to or linking up with services. But it's also the parole officer plays a role in trying to refer them to county services. This is some results from Elizabeth Marlowe's work up in the Bay Area. She did a in-depth interviews with 17 middle-aged parolees. They were had chronic health conditions. They all had addiction problems in terms of crack cocaine, meth, heroin, but also had a number of it's impressive the list of chronic health conditions they had, from diabetes, coronary artery disease, hypertension, HIV/AIDS, hepatitis C. And so she explored in depth them, what are some of the perceived barriers in terms of accessing health care. Some you're beginning to see the themes that are coming from these different avenues and talking to these folks about feeling that both lack of insurance and finances limits their options in terms of trying to rely on the county safety net. Some of them felt that in general, if you go to county, it tended to be a lower quality of care than if you went to other service providers. They identified such administrative barriers as bureaucratic and procedural obstacles. For example, one individual had his medical records lost. He ended up having to be evaluated over and over again, and it ultimately resulted in a break in continuity of care. Importantly, such things as perceived indifference on the staff, a lack of empathy, or in some ways stigmatizing them that they are from coming out of prison. And again, feeling that it's very difficult and challenging to engage with a system, a healthcare system, that they feel that they're not welcomed in. Now, I want to talk about what's going on in California, because this is happening in a number of states in terms of attempts to reduce corrections costs as well as the cost of health services in general. In January of this year, California implemented a new parole policy called Non-Revocable Parole, NRP. And what it's designed to do is to, when people are leaving prison, they get assessed using this risk assessment scale as to whether or not they're low to moderate risk offenders. They also exclude people that have committed serious and violent crimes, sex offenders, validated gang members, but prison gang members. That's important because that's very different from gang members that are out in the community. There's some overlap, not necessarily complete. If you're on NRP status, that means once you're released, you're no longer going to be supervised by parole, and you cannot be returned for technical violations. In California, where you have this incredible churning of folks that we violate them for very minimal violations, and so we have this incredible amount of return to prison. So we're trying to, this is an attempt to try to address that. But it also means how INAPRI is defined is that it disproportionately will include women as well as individuals that have been incarcerated for drug-related offenses. This is all happening in the context, again, of California having substantially cut its rehabilitative programs, including substance abuse treatment in prison. What this means for this population as they come out is that they're no longer going to be eligible for even corrections-funded treatment out in the community. This is a population in general that providers have a difficult time identifying. Traditional mechanisms for this population to try to link them to services, including parole, are no longer going to be in place. So they truly are going to fall on counties' strained safety nets, but they also, like the homeless population, since they become a hen population in terms of nobody knows really how to track them. For county mental health and alcohol drug treatment programs, they're extremely concerned about this. They feel that that this is going to land in their lap, that they're already experiencing significant cuts in base funding, and they expect to see a big increase in demand for services. This is some of the issues that we're going to be exploring in our interviews with providers that we're just beginning next week, in fact. But in fact, what we think actually may happen is that because this is a population that has a hard time linking to services even without all these kind of breakage of the linkages. And in fact, the impact may actually be felt more on hospital ERs as well as county jail treatment services. In situations like this, in an odd way, NRP also represents an opportunity. When you talk to different providers, they basically will say, this is not a population, that's my problem. But in fact, it's now becoming their problem. So what we're seeing is that it's an opportunity for non-traditional stakeholders, for example, like law enforcement, county safety net, and community providers to begin to coordinate and working on this issue. So this change that's really changing the landscape, not just in California, but in other states, we're trying to take into account in our analyses. We're in the process of conducting focus groups. We're working with community organizations in San Diego, Los Angeles, and Alameda County to conduct focus groups for those that were formerly incarcerated. We're also going to be conducting interviews with all the key service providers. It's a very interesting process to try to identify who those folks are. It's really almost a snowball approach because it varies from county to county. It's not always obvious who's really the people that are providing services to these folks. As an aside, we're also exploring a little bit kind of the impact of incarceration on children and those left behind. We're going to be building on this later on. I wanted to acknowledge the project team on this, including Reverend Eugene Williams from RCNO. And this is the report that the California Assembly has been working with and thinking about what needs to be done in terms of reentry. It's available online. Thank you.